This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. The holidays mean more travel, more shopping, more time online, and more personal info in places that could expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second. If your identity is stolen, their U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed or your money back. Get more holiday fun and less holiday worry with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/podcast. Terms apply.
News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Wow, I'm so glad you're here. We have a big show coming your way this hour. Brett Baer, man, does he know his stuff as he tapped in. Everything from drones to paying our bills. Rich Lowry, National Review. The rise of Trump 2. I didn't predict it going this well so quick. And I did not predict that Joe Biden was going to disappear so pervasively so early, but he has. He's actually in Delaware now. It is Wednesday. My goodness. You got the rest of your life to sit on the beach or whatever you're doing, pretend to ride a bike, and you can't stay in the White House a few more days to finish out the week. However, today is also something significant, not the sexiest thing, but we'll impact you. The Federal Reserve Board Chairman Jerome Powell has a presser following the Federal Open Market Committee meeting. So we'll find out where the rates go. We know that for 8 straight days, the market's gone down, so they're not optimistic it'll be big rate cuts. So let's get to the big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Good morning. Oh. Remember the context in which you exist. Yeah, I did that.
Thank goodness she didn't win. Dems divide. Kamala getting an incoherent, making an incoherent state of her party speech as she, as the old guard is still blocking the new guard. And bitterness of Biden is directed at the broken former speaker. At least she's got a broken hip.
Number two.
He should fire his lawyer, the one that petitioned the FDA to get rid of the polio vaccine. He should call his lawyer up and say, look, man, stop dipping into your ketamine stash. Polio vaccine has saved hundreds and hundreds of millions of lives in the world.
Here we go. Trump transition highlighted by massive acceptance and optimism as his new team of nominees impress at the Capitol while Congress scrambles to avoid a shutdown. By the way, Senator Kennedy was talking about RFK. He's just being blunt. You got to be able to defend yourself one-on-one, and I think RFK is ready to do that. But but the president of the United States, the new one, might be getting a hand grenade in March if they had this CR in December.
Number one.
I had a discussion with an individual from the White House, and that person basically told me that, hey, once these immigrants get across the border, that's all we really care about. And to me, that's a problem.
I think so. Worst by the day, and that, of course, Aurora police chief. Worst by the day, Biden's broken policies on the border have made big cities and small towns more terrifying than we even believe was possible. As we learn, his application by app to get into our country has quietly let in over 900,000 illegals, 1,500 a day. Plus, we confirm what we all knew, the Aurora, Colorado townhouse and city is a safe haven for transnational legal immigrant gangs. Trump, Vance, and locals should get a written I am sorry apology from President Biden and Vice President Harris. Let's bring in Brett Baer. Brett, think about this. Now we find out two people were taken. They were kidnapped. They were tortured. Fingernails taken out by what looks to be this Venezuelan gang in, drumroll please, Aurora, where we were told by one party and one governor, Jared Polis, there was no illegal immigrant problem. Isn't that interesting, Brett?
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. It's also interesting for ABC that did the interview with J.D. Vance in which Martha Raddatz said, but it's only one apartment complex. You know, listen, I think anytime you hear about gangs operating like this in such, you know, autonomy and kind of in heinous action against the people of that community, it doesn't matter how many apartment complexes it is, one, three, five, it's happening and it's real.
So here is that flashback moment. I watched it October 13th, when obviously a month before the election, 3 weeks before the election, J.D. Vance is talking about the visit to Aurora and to places like Springfield, Ohio, where they think it's been overrun by illegal immigrants on all from all sects, whether it's Haiti or Venezuela. They're overwhelmed, and so are law enforcement officials. So listen to this, cut six.
President Trump was actually in Aurora, Colorado, talking to people on the ground. And what we're hearing, of course, Martha, is that people are terrified by what has happened with some of these Venezuelan gangs.
Senator Vance, I'm going to stop you because I know exactly what happened. Martha. I'm going to stop you. The incidents were limited to a handful of apartment complexes, and the mayor said our dedicated police officers have acted on those concerns. A handful of problems.
Only, Martha, do you hear yourself? Only a handful of apartment complexes in America were taken over by Venezuelan gangs, and Donald Trump is the problem and not Kamala Harris's open border?
It's almost laughable. I think that "do you hear yourself" was one of the most noteworthy phrases to emerge from the election cycle.
Yeah, I agree. And he handled that very well. But, you know, when you hear her say, "I'm going to stop you," like, you're saying something that's not true. It's only a handful of apartment complex. And it's just so stark. It's so striking. And I think, you know, I think it was a good example of pushing back, and now you get the reality, you know, months later.
So here you have 14 of those suspects been arrested. Two are from Honduras. They believe it is Tren de Aragua, who are located now in 20 states. Tom Homan's going to have his hands full, but I think he's going to have the sentiment of the people behind him. On seeing stories, you know, it's easy to focus on New York and Chicago. But when you find out that a Utah town is reaching out to the federal government because they're overwhelmed by illegal immigrants, when you see Springfield, Ohio, overrun and doubled in size, and then you see Aurora, Colorado, councilwomen in certain areas who are hamstrung by their allegiance to their party speaking out, I think it's pretty noteworthy. In fact, I think it's also noteworthy that everyone says that Governor Polis is a moderate governor who's willing to act. I don't see it. He was denying. He thought Trump was exaggerating. Here is Tom Chamberlain, the Aurora police chief. Cut one.
I had a discussion with an individual from the White House, and that occurred back on September the 23rd, I believe. And that person basically told me that, hey, once these immigrants get across the border, that's all we really care about. And to me, that's a problem.
So that's pretty serious. And we'll see where we go. This is going to be Joe Biden's legacy. And on the way out, he's doing nothing but selling off the border wall to reinforce that he believes he was successful. Did you see the story in the New York Times today? As Peter Baker writes, suddenly Joe Biden is looking old, having trouble walking, shuffling. When he goes over to the Amazon for an appearance, people kind of gasped when they saw him up close. And it was hard to imagine he ever thought he could get another 4 years. But can you believe how they're writing this as if we didn't call this out along the way over the last 4 years? They're just discovering this now?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. If you think about, you know, all the lead up to that first debate on June 27th and how, you know, we who ran videos were talked about as running deep fakes or, you know, these videos that were out of context, supposedly, about his state of mind. And then the debate happens and everybody says, wait a second, you know, this is a big problem. And then they do the shift to Kamala Harris. She loses. And now everyone suddenly realizes how old President Biden is. And it's just I guess it's predictable, but it's a shame. And I think Democrats have some real remorse about how all that went down. Had he not run, you know, had he at the beginning said, I'm going to pass the torch like I said I was going to do, you know, maybe they would have had a vibrant primary. I'm not sure they could have beaten the juggernaut in Donald Trump in that he was touching all the right notes, but it would have been different.
It would have been. So let's talk about something that is also up your alley, and that is the CRs that come at Christmas. It's not an omnibus, but it is a continuing resolution that's going to pay our bills up until March. A lot of people are upset by it. Senator Mike Lee went to RFK Stadium at $50 billion for Big Pharma, and two Smithsonian museums have to do with America devastated by hurricanes. You have, obviously, Chip Roy seems always to be angry and disappointed in Nicole Malliotakis. Everything I'm hearing thus far leads me to believe that I'll be voting no. Marjorie Taylor Greene, the CR, is turning into a three-month omnibus. And Chip Roy, this is negotiating crap. We get the negotiating crap, and we're forced to eat the crap sandwich. So, Senator, you know, we had the speaker on Fox and Friends today. He's like, this is the best we can do with only one half of one chamber in Washington. How do you think this is going to be received when people within 72 hours? Do you think it passes?
It's going to need President-elect Trump's help, I think. It's going to need some pressure from above. And already you have, you know, Elon Musk and some people, you know, concerned about Doge saying this is a bill that shouldn't go if you're going to, you know, spend money and then try to cut money. Basically, Speaker Johnson said, get me to the new Congress and we can, you know, work on our agenda. But I have to get there. And, you know, this is dicey business. It's such a slim majority. It's a real pickle for Speaker Johnson, who is up for, you know, his speaker vote January 3rd. He said he wasn't worried about it, but I think there may be reason to worry as they dig into the specifics here.
Yeah, I mean, on the highlights don't seem that controversial. $100 billion for disaster relief. We know where those disasters happen. $30 billion for FEMA. They've been saying they've been out of money. $10 billion in economic assistance for farmers. He just said to me the farmers are really struggling. A lot of it has to do with the policies of this administration. Adds 2.25 to small business loans. A restriction on outbound investment to China. That's what Democrats want. E15 ethanol sales waiver appropriation, $50 million for D.C. to pay for operational and security costs related to the inauguration. And then they're going to be getting a new stadium, refurbishing RFK, bringing it back to Washington. I guess we got to pay for that. And it's bad news for Maryland, but the good news for Maryland is they'll get their bridge paid for that was wrecked.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, in D.C., here in D.C., this is a big move that they really have been pushing for a long time to get to try to get the team back. It's the first step to refurbish RFK and to get a new stadium. But, yeah, I could see why somebody from Utah who's concerned about the deficit and debt says, why do we need that right now on the backs of taxpayers? I get it. And I don't know if that's going to be the one that brings things down, but the overall push it down their throat mentality doesn't sit well with a lot of these folks who were elected on changing the process.
All right, so you don't know where it's going to happen in the next 72 hours. Elon Musk going to see his power in Washington because he said don't pass the bill. So we'll see how much power he has. If Trump put that out there, they'd probably have to go redo it. So the losers, the losers, they say, is Africa legislation to extend African Growth and Opportunity Act. That's bad for Biden, but also maybe bad for us because China's making major gains there. And the pharmaceutical benefit manager, they lost big on a provision to redirect spending on prescription drugs to healthcare plans and pharmaceutical companies. This is the middlemen that Donald Trump referred to at his presser that he says they're making way too much money for doing way too little. So we'll see how this goes. It's just so easy, Brett. There's people that want to comment and there's people that want to get stuff done. Anybody, if you put Jim Jordan in there or Chip Roy, they would have come up with the same deal because they have very little power right now.
Yeah. You want a better deal. You want to be able to pass the bill that you want to pass. Well, then you have to get a majority that's not so slim that you only can lose, you know, two or three. So, you know, Elon Musk says don't pass the bill, but you know, you've got to fund the government. If you don't fund the government, you have a real problem right ahead of Christmas. And that becomes a political boomerang that hurts you in the midterms, which then hurts your agenda, which then slows everything down. So the whole thing is like a giant, you know, you got to think four steps ahead politically. Is it the best deal? No. Does it get them potentially into the new Congress? Yes. And I think it's going to be a squeaker, but President-elect Trump's going to have to weigh in.
Real quick, Brad, your name came up in the story by all these so-called insiders looking at the aftermath of what went wrong with Kamala Harris. And they said that she didn't want to do media in what she already convinced people they were going to be easy, like the New York Times and others. She tried to get on sports radio. Okay. And they didn't want her on. Shocker. She doesn't know sports. And number two is they said the biggest viral moment came when she sat down with Bret Baier, We got more response, more fundraising off that than anything else. But she didn't really want to do any other combative or potentially challenging interviews. And I thought, I love just your take on it. The fact that they looked at that moment as a positive, and it took forever for you to set up. Could you give us a backstory on that?
Well, it did take a long time to set up. And afterwards, I did hear from their folks, and they thought that she had a viral moment that they wanted. But clearly, they were preparing her for like this dust up, you know, like almost like a debate. As I sat down to start the interview, she was about 17 minutes delayed for one reason or another. I mean, she was in the room, in the building, but anyway, she came out about 17 minutes after what she was supposed to, and we had a deadline, and she started and she said, "Are you ready?" And so it was clearly set that she wanted to have a moment, and they came away with that moment, the back and forth, and she was going, you know, aggressively at some of the answers. She talked about Trump about 20 times in that interview. And so it wasn't the interview I thought it was going to be, but it ended up being a very viral moment. I was told that it was the single highest rated one-on-one interview since O.J. Simpson sat with Larry King in 1995.
Wow. And I think it benefited her. I wish she would have realized that and got involved and done more of it. But that's what for her to figure out, or their party. Brett Baer, thanks so much. Have a great show tonight at 6 p.m. Eastern time. Is that okay?
That's okay. Tune in.
All right. Go get it. All right. Brett Baer, when we come back, we'll take your calls, 1-866-408-7669. When we come back, too, you'll find out what the Democrats are starting to realize about Trump. Don't move.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor, editor-at-large of The Spectator, and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. I'm inviting you to join in-depth conversations every week on the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Folks have said to me that they're not sure whether they have the strength, much less the desire, to stay in the fight. But let me be very clear. No one can walk away. No one can walk away. We must stay in the fight. Every one of us.
What is she even talking about? She was addressing young Democrats and said, "We got to keep fighting." For what? What was your mission? To spend more, to let more people in illegally, to weaken our defense, get us involved in conflicts without any resolution, go halfway into every major decision, be anti-Israeli, be pro-Palestinian? What did you stand for? Green energy, green spending, lack of accountability on infrastructure, putting out programs that jack up the price of goods, inflation goes through the roof, and deny it later? I don't know. What are you fighting for? Democrats, she should be talking about, number one, she gives speeches, talk about what she's going to want to do and where do you think the country's heading. And then I would sit there with think tanks and talk to people for about a year before I decided what I was going to do and what I wanted to run on. But what are you fighting for? And this is why whoever runs the DNC has got to be strong enough to say she cannot be the automatic nominee next time. This has got to be a flat out fight if I'm a Democrat. Because you have to listen to her speech. And people want to say that she's drinking. I don't think she's drinking. I just think she's not sure of what she's saying.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I hate to say it, but Scott is actually right about this one. I hate to say it because Scott and I very rarely agree on anything. He's right about this in the fact that sloppy journalism, sloppy polling, and what they did, I was the recipient of more than 100 lies. And I understand what Trump is doing in terms of changing the way defamation cases are brought in this country. You may remember the allegations I was in Prague. Never been to Prague. I was in Czechoslovakia. I paid $10 million to Kompromats. I have a house next to Putin in Sochi. None of this is true. On top of that, there was another one that came out as an example where I allegedly was paid $400,000 by Poroshenko to create a meeting between him and Donald Trump during the presidency. That is also not true.
So Michael Cohen, who brought the whole court case and cost Donald Trump millions of dollars and got himself jailed for lying multiple times and has been trying to be, and he's failed at this, the ultimate nemesis to Donald Trump, but he's failed spectacularly, found himself agreeing on CNN that Donald Trump is not treated fairly by the press and gave his own personal hurdles that he had to clear as an example. So when you sit there and say Donald Trump is going to go for redemption, no, he's not going for redemption. He just wants authentic coverage. Rich Lowry is editor of National Review and author of The Case for Nationalism. Rich, your reaction to Donald Trump winning, what, $15 million out of ABC and now going after the Iowa newspaper whose poll published that a poll that would have impact on the election, but ultimately that he was about to lose Iowa.
Yeah, it's almost as good as we're going to build a wall and Mexico is going to pay for it. Trump's going to have a presidential library and the legacy media is going to pay for it. Please pay for a wing in it. It's unbelievable. I think the difference, though, between George Stephanopoulos and Ann Seltzer is Stephanopoulos said something that was defamatory repeatedly on air, right? I mean, just dead to rights. That he was not found liable for rape. He said it repeatedly. And this ambush of Nancy Mace wasn't an attempt to elicit any information from her. It's just an attempt to embarrass and corner her. And Stephanopoulos ended up paying the price. Seltzer, I think, was just a bad poll. And it was a scam in the sense that the media ran with it. They wanted to will it into being true. So that was a disgraceful performance, among many others, towards the end of the campaign. But I don't see how there's anything that's truly actionable there.
Right, because unless you find out that they approached this poll totally differently. They went for their samples totally in an odd way. They did went out of their way not to balance it between Democrats and Republicans. But if they went about it the same way, I don't know if you could take action against the result of a poll. But I know at Fox, they tell us just back off polls a week before the election, mm-hmm. You know, because people want to just go vote. And you don't want to be responsible for saying he's losing or she's winning. So we always do that personally. We're not looking to get the latest poll out there. I think they stop a week before. But, Rich, this did make a difference. But unless she messed with her science behind it, I don't see that she's vulnerable.
Well, even if she did, and I haven't talked to any defamation lawyers about this or First Amendment lawyers, but I think even if she did, that's not defamatory. That's just a terrible practice and something she shouldn't have done and something she should be disgraced by, but it's not necessarily actionable. It's different than Stephanopoulos going on the record and saying something that's wrong and arguably malicious, and who knows why they actually settled, but it seems as though they didn't want to go through discovery and a deposition, and maybe there's an embarrassing email in there where there's some doubt about how to portray this, and he kind of ran through the red light and said the worst thing about Trump he could think of, which is not, right, is not unusual given what we've seen over the last 10 years now. And to Michael Cohen's clip, you know, I have no use for Michael Cohen, but he did live at the center of one of the chief media failures and hysterias and episode of fake news that we've seen.
Remember, they raided his office when he was on Trump's team and he lived in New York City. They raided his office. I mean, think about that. You have to raid his office to get to the bottom of what? What were you looking for?
Yeah. No, the whole thing was a scam. It was obviously a scam. People should have known it was a scam just by reading and using common sense. But certainly the FBI knew it was a scam very early on and continued to pursue it. And you know, I remember being on a Fox News Sunday with you at some point there in 17 or 18. You're like, and it was when the Mueller probe was nearing its end. It's like, maybe finally Trump's going to get a normal presidency here. But it took away 2 years of his time and energy and political capital.
And in 2 weeks, they had a Ukrainian impeachment trial.
Yep.
George Stephanopoulos, apoplectic, humiliated after ABC decides to pay $16 million, according to reports. They said he said that his claim against Trump They raped E. Jean Carroll during an interview with Republican lawmaker Nancy Mace, who was particularly upset about being forced to apologize, that according to a source. And he's beside himself. Now, he's got a five-year contract. But have you been on with him? He is not. He is enraged every time Trump's name came up. He couldn't believe Trump got the nomination. He couldn't believe he was running for office. I cannot imagine what he's like knowing that Trump won. And now he's got, I wonder, does he ever have any credibility? Does he have any credibility to host his own show?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, I found the times I've been on with him, I've found him to be fine and relatively fair-minded. But, you know, he was a Democratic hatchet man, right? You look at that documentary War Room about Clinton's campaign in 1992. It was all based on intimidating reporters and keeping them from reporting things that were true about Bill Clinton. And then he ascended to one of the highest echelons of the legacy media, which kind of tells you all you need to know.
So Chuck Todd called ABC's new settlement with Trump a gut punch for all media and argued it sets a precedent that will likely make reporters' job much more difficult. He told Chris Caliza that on an interview. He said the concessions by the network stem from a defamation suit. We know it. But he finds it stunning. Quote, this was stunning to me and absolutely a gut punch to anybody who works in major media, because I think it does set a precedent. And now it's going to be very difficult to get out from underneath this potentially. I just think the risk of losing this suit was 5% if they went through to it. And the fact that they settled means that people are going to think twice before they maybe accuse somebody of rape when they don't rape people.
Yeah, I know. It's just it was arguably libelous, right? Maybe he's right. If they went through the whole process, they would have won, because the judge did make that statement that, you know, he was guilty of rape, supposedly, based on a common definition, although not the legal one. I'm not sure why the judge was opining in that way. But maybe if you're Stephanopoulos, maybe see that's enough to hang your legal case on. But still, what are they being brushed back from? Making potentially libelous statements about the president. Maybe being a little more careful about that. That's not the end of free speech or free media in America.
Right. I want you to hear, people are beginning to change their tone on Trump in a way I didn't think was ever possible. I thought when he left office, people would take a different look at him, but not while he went back and he's about to go into office. And we'll see how long it lasts. But I do sense a huge tone change. And I think some people are getting respectful anyway. So Bret Stephens, a Republican conservative columnist in The New York Times, wrote a column. It published last night, but maybe it's out today. And he said, I'm no longer a never Trumper. I've tried that. He's going to be president for 4 years. I'll take him at his word. I'm just going to start covering him, but no longer from the never Trumper perspective. And listen to Van Jones, cut 23.
The problem is you have a framework in your mind that how can Donald Trump? Guys, can we cut it out? Donald Trump is not an idiot. Donald Trump, let me just be very clear. Donald Trump is smarter than me, you, and all critics. You know why we know? Because he has the White House, the Senate, the House.
Totally agree.
Court, the popular vote. This dude is a phenomenon. He is the most powerful human on Earth and in our lifetime. And we're still saying, well, how is this guy? We look like idiots.
How about that?
Van Jones is a very good political analyst and a very good communicator and very shrewd, and will call them the way he sees them. And this is another instance of that. Look, you know, Trump didn't quite win 50% right, but he won a majority of the votes, free and fair, of the American people. And if that doesn't, if you're, you know, as harsh as critic, that doesn't at least make you think a little bit like maybe I've been slightly off about him. Maybe there are virtues to him I've underappreciated. You're not a thinking, sentient human being. So good for Bret Stephens. Good for Van Jones.
All right. Well, I guess we'll see where it goes. I'm looking just real quick on the transition. RFK is not getting a headwind. Senator Kennedy wants some answers when it comes to vaccines. Senator Collins, too, but she's keeping her powder dry. Gillibrand seems relatively positive after meeting with, you know, says, I'm looking forward to meeting with him. So obviously the name Kennedy, they have some. He is Democratic support by trade. Who should Trump be most worried about? And who have you impressed you so far? Who's been walking the halls and meeting with senators?
Well, the Eye of Sauron has moved from Pete Hegseth, who really, I didn't think it was going to happen, but he really changed the whole dynamic with that one week where his mom, you know, went on with you guys, and he went on Megyn Kelly, and he was forceful defending himself. That really changed the dynamic. I thought that he was like under 50% chance of getting confirmed. Now he's in a much safer place, but still might have three votes baked in against him. So I think that's true of Pete, Tulsi, and Kennedy. So none of those three are out of the woods. And with Kennedy, you know, reports have been, I've been down there, you know, it's all secondhand, that he's kind of lording it over Mar-a-Lago and walking around like he owns the place, when he should be so incredibly humbled and grateful for the fact he's an environmental extremist, pro-abortion Democrat who has this huge plumb of a position in the Trump administration, perhaps. But you know, it's they're going to be Republicans. They don't like where he is on ag, whether Kennedy is right or not on that. They're not going to like where he is on abortion, and you're going to have, you know, the public health sector, such as it is, with their hair on fire. So I think that's the one that you'd guess is in most danger at the moment.
Tulsi,
I kind of think she gets through. You know, it's awkward because if you're a hawk on the Republican side, you're not a fan of Tulsi, but I kind of think she gets through. The one that's been least controversial and maybe benefiting the most from all the fire being directed at all these other people is Kash Patel. You know, I think he's just going to sail through.
Me too, and especially because Christopher Ray made it easy. He stepped out. And I think Grassley, when he stepped up and said, you should go now, people thought, wow, it's not just Trump trying to watch his back. This guy was not responsive to a very traditional Republican, conservative Republican, who does not really fear Trump or anybody. But I think he does things very fair and balanced. Here's what Susan Collins, who's got always a tough vote for Republicans in any type of, I guess, critical situation. Cut 10.
We had a very thorough and good discussion. We talked about, I'm not going to go into the details, but we talked about Syria, her visit to see Assad. We talked about Ukraine. We talked about Putin. We talked about NATO. We talked about her positions on introducing legislation that would have removed the criminal charges for Snowden. And so it was a very broad and wide-ranging discussion.
Right. Look, she's open. She didn't say no. Did have the meeting, you know, about Tulsi.
Yeah. So, you know, none of these people, well, with the exception, I might make an exception for Kennedy, but none of them are going to live down to their stereotypes, right? They make Kash Patel sound like an idiot and a fanatic when he knows a lot and is a very nice guy and is going to come across that way in meetings. Same thing with Pete, a hugely charming guy, right? I can't imagine anyone who'd be better in a one-on-one meeting with the senator. So I think Tulsi gets through just because, on top of everything else, it's not, even though it sounds like the most important position in the intelligence world and in theory sits at the top of the hierarchy there, that's not the way it works functionally.
That's true. And I do think that she's very good on her feet. The president picked really good communicators. You know, RFK has trouble speaking, but he doesn't have trouble articulating.
So yeah, he knows what he thinks.
He knows what he thinks, but we'll find out. If he just says X, Y, and Z about vaccines, if he tells us that our food is poisoning us, I want to tell us what vaccines are good. What do you know about that and autism? What exactly are you studying? You know what? And if he's an inch deep, it'll show. And if he's not, he'll overwhelm some of these senators because no one doubts his intellect.
This is the one case I think anyone who gets to a confirmation hearing is going to make it, because I think it's just going to be – it would be so awkward for Republican senators to actually stand up and say, oh, I'm the fourth vote against this given nominee. So anyone goes down is kind of on the Gates model, you know, 6 to 8 senators behind the scenes and the nominations pulled, with the possible exception of Kennedy. I think that confirmation hearing is going to be ugly, contentious, fascinating. And a lot could depend on his performance.
Absolutely. It's going to be an entertaining January. We'll see what happens. And hopefully just stay out of the personal stuff. We don't care about his marriages.
Mm-hmm.
Can we just tell me what he ask him about all those things we just mentioned. And I think the American people will be benefiting and will be enough of the soap opera. We'll even though it'll sell more National Review copies. Thanks so much, Rich.
Important.
I appreciate
thanks,
it.
Brian.
All right. Some calls next. Don't move.
politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Christmas is just 9 days away, and everyone's in the spirit. Tonight, I was admiring all the beautiful lights, and then I realized that there was just the drones over New Jersey.
One New Jersey politician proposed a bill to give local law enforcement the same type of capability as the Department of Defense and Homeland Security, permission to down one of these unmanned drones. He wants local police to shoot at anything in the sky in December. Santa, I hope you have a Kevlar sleigh. And don't forget to take the battery out of Rudolph's nose. We will have more on the story as we continue to learn nothing about it.
Which is true, by the way. We know less every time we get these guys get out of a briefing. So President Biden spoke yesterday about what exactly it is, these drones in the sky, and why he's not worried about it. Man, just to take 2 weeks tells you what a bad president he is. He has no interest in communication. He's bitter. He says there's nothing nefarious about the recent drone sightings. He said nothing. He says we're following it closely. So far, no sense of danger. Well, tell us who it is. Tell us what they're doing. Tell us why it's allowed. Tell us what the theory is on letting these people fly. I guess there's a million people with drone licenses. Now, how many are fixed wing? How many are people just looking up for the first time? In how many states are they going to be here? At what point, how many of these drones can you identify? Why do you think it's not coming from the shore? And then just when you think, okay, there's nothing to worry about, then you have somebody weigh in like Michael McCall and say this, who is a chairman of the Armed Forces Committee, Cut 30.
We want answers, but the response that I'm getting is that we don't know whose drones these are. My judgment, based on my experience, is that those that are over our military sites are adversarial and most likely are coming from the People's Republic of China. The PRC, Chinese Communist China, is very good at this stuff. And we know they bought land around military bases. This would be very consistent with their policy over the last couple of years.
Okay, president says no big deal. He's saying, well, we don't have any answers. I'm in on those meetings. So I think it looks like China. Which one is it? It seems like a big deal. All right. Brian Kilmeade, right here. I'm going to be in Florida, Jacksonville, February 15th. Go to BrianKilmeade.com so I can see you in person.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks so much for being here, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. We come to you from Midtown Manhattan, where it is packed, packed with people visiting or New Yorkers just wanting to walk around. We got our tree on 48th and 6th. We got Rockefeller Plaza diagonally across and all these restaurants. I was talking to a couple of restaurateurs over the last 2 days, and they said it is so busy. But the one thing that's different this year is competition because so many opened up. Now, considering where we were a few years ago, that's pretty significant because for a while you couldn't even get a restaurant. You were in a restaurant. The ones that were able to survive on money, then they'd be worried about paying people. They upped minimum wage. It made it not plausible, feasible to stay in power, to stay in business, I should say. And things have changed. On the national scope, keep in mind, there's something that's going to affect the market today. The Federal Reserve Board Chair Jerome Powell will hold a news conference after the Federal Open Market Committee meeting, and they'll find out what's going to happen with rates. That's going to be significant. Already this morning, they had the new House Committee on the Border met and talked about a strategy from day one when Donald Trump takes over. It's too bad we got to wait till January 20th to keep these criminals out and seal up the border. But not only are they not sealing the border, they're selling off the fence, the wall. Big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Good morning. Oh. Remember the context in which you exist. Yeah, I did that. Uh-huh.
Yeah, they told her not to laugh when she was running for office. Now you know why. Dems divide. Kamala gets an incoherent, gives an incoherent state of her party speech. And the old guard is still blocking the new guard like AOC from getting any substantial committee assignments. And bitterness of Joe Biden is directed at the broken hip wonder, the former Speaker Pelosi.
Number two.
He should fire his lawyer, the one that petitioned the FDA to get rid of the polio vaccine. He should call his lawyer up and say, look, man, stop dipping into your ketamine stash. Polio vaccine has saved hundreds and hundreds of millions of lives in the world.
Trump transition. You saw it, Senator Kennedy talking about Senator Kennedy. Bobby Kennedy Jr., highlighted by massive acceptance and optimism as the new team of nominees impress on the Capitol Hill, while Congress scrambles to avoid a shutdown but might hand off a hand grenade to the new president in March.
Number one.
I had a discussion with an individual from the White House, and that person basically told me that, hey, once these immigrants get across the border, that's all we really care about. And to me, that's a problem.
That is Todd Chamberlain, police chief of Aurora, Colorado. Worse by the day. Biden's border policies have made big cities and small towns more dangerous, more terrifying. And we have case in point of what happened yesterday. The kidnapping, the torture, and eventually the release by a transnational gang in Aurora, a place that they told us that was being over-exaggerated by President Trump in order to underline illegal immigration in America. I'm not kidding. Let me give you an idea of what happened. 14 suspects and 204 sets suspected TEA members, that notorious Venezuelan gang, and two Hondurans were arrested yesterday after it looks like they were identified as a group that captured, kidnapped, and tortured in a nearby room at that apartment complex. They told us was no big deal when it was taken a short time ago in Aurora. And they were able to get out only because they promised not to tell the cops. They lied. Within 30 minutes, they told the cops and the arrest began. And the police chief said we had to go into an armed apartment invasion and go get these guys and pull them out. They don't even belong here. Here's Todd Chamberlain talking about what they found and why they're in this position now. Cut one.
I had a discussion with an individual from the White House, and that occurred back on September the 23rd, I believe. And that person basically told me that, hey, once these immigrants get across the border, that's all we really care about. And to me, that's a problem.
Yeah, that's a problem big time, because in September, you needed some help and you needed federal government's help. And at least you have to underline the issue and alert the Border Patrol about the people that are getting through, what they look like, what they say when they're interrogated, when they're actually arrested. And it could help pick them up across the country. Do you know this Venezuelan gang is now has significant representation in 20 states? Do you know that 56% of the entire illegal immigrant population is located in sanctuary states, sanctuary cities? That's 8 million people. You know, they know exactly where to go not to get kicked out. Here's more from the police chief. Cut two.
We have individuals that come to a country. They get dropped off into a community. They have absolutely no infrastructure. They have absolutely no support. They have absolutely no guidance from the federal government about what to do, how to live, how to survive. And this is the ramifications of that activity. This is the ramifications of not monitoring what's occurring and how it's occurring and who is it occurring to. And so, Aurora, we are now in the process, as many other cities throughout this nation, of trying to pick up the pieces of an incredibly bad system that was in place.
You know, I know this police chief just got hired, but, you know, he said he had conversations in September. You know, Trump was out on a limb. J.D. Vance was out on a limb, and others were saying, look at what's going on in Aurora. We were able to get the tape and a councilwoman Democrat to speak up and shout out that Aurora is falling like Denver. And this is a problem. And then when Trump went there, you're making too much of a problem because you want to get elected. It's not a big problem in Colorado. The mayor there, way to the left, says, oh, we got this. I'm going to protect my illegal immigrants. Why are you protecting criminals? To have an ICE agent come up and empty your prisons of illegals is a gift. They're no longer your responsibility. And I wish this guy, Todd Chamberlain, would have spoken out, whatever position he had in Aurora, and said, I had a conversation with the White House, and they say, basically, you're on your own. Because it would have forced Joe Biden, Kamala Harris to answer. And then we would have found out what they stood for. So J.D. Vance was on ABC. And just to go show you how detached experienced reporters are, that Donald Trump might be actually telling the truth that illegal immigration might be a problem. I bring you back to October 13th. Cut six.
President Trump was actually in Aurora, Colorado, talking to people on the ground. And what we're hearing, of course, Martha, is that people are terrified by what has happened with some of these Venezuelan gangs.
Senator Vance, I'm going to stop you because I know exactly what happened. Martha. I'm going to stop you. The incidents were limited to a handful of apartment complexes, and the mayor said our dedicated police officers have acted on those concerns. A handful of problems.
Only, Martha, do you hear yourself? Only a handful of apartment complexes in America were taken over by Venezuelan gangs, and Donald Trump is the problem and not Kamala Harris's open border?
I mean, can you hear yourself? Do you hear yourself is the one of the lines that stands out with me. And I said at the time, and you probably did too, that I'll remember. It's almost as if you're in two universes, parallel universes. You're not talking to a local reporter, 23 years old, who has a point of view. You're talking to someone probably in her 60s that covers international conflicts, has the respect of a lot of Pentagon reporters, Pentagon and warfighters in Martha Raddatz. But she's so deranged in her anti-Trumpism, she actually thinks that everything they say is exaggerated and that Joe Biden's border is fine and the Republicans just trying to make hay of it because they don't like Hispanic people. That's the old mantra. I hope by now that somehow these reporters will just try treating him fairly and say, my goodness, did you see that video of an Aurora, Colorado middle-class apartment complex being taken over by Venezuelan gangs? Why is that not where you start this conversation and then talk about how you control it, who let them in, what were the status that they portrayed themselves as, and how do you get them out? Could Donald Trump get him out? Should have been the conversation. How would he do it? That would have been a good conversation instead of what's the big deal? It's only one apartment complex. I have to stop you there. It's absolutely insane. And what about that Governor Jared Polis? This is you're now disqualified for running for president because when you had a problem in your own state, you played politics. You didn't care about your own people. Instead of using the attention that was coming on Denver and Aurora, you decided to deny there was a problem. So that hurt the people that put you in office so you could help yourself get in good graces with your party. How bad is it? How about Utah? Quote, from the Salt Lake City Council District 2 candidate to the New York Post. This is how bad it is with this Venezuelan gang. Our law enforcement people are not ready. They are not ready yet to face these kind of gangs in Utah because the way that they do things is totally different than the criminals here in the United States. That's why people right now are very afraid and they don't want these kinds of people in the United States. So I'm not talking about New York and Chicago, where a lot of people listen to the show and say, well, that's why I don't live there. Okay? Chicago and New York are a mess with illegal immigrants, awash with illegal immigrants. But I'm talking about Salt Lake County in Utah. I'm talking about Aurora, Colorado. I'm talking about Springfield, Ohio. President can't get there quick enough. Also, I love that Bill Hagerty's doing this. Bill Hagerty is moving to block the federal government from disposing of the border wall materials amid the auction backlash. This clown in the White House, who will go down as one of the worst presidents we will ever experience, I hope, goes out and is selling on pennies on the dollars, giving up our fence, the wall that we paid for. You did, everybody did, whether you voted for Trump or not, that's laying in the desert on pennies of the dollars going to auction houses. Some of it's been destroyed. Some of it's been sold. I want what's left to go up. Hagerty says he's introducing legislation to prohibit the use of federal funds to deconstruct, dismantle, or otherwise render inoperable any segment of the physical barrier. So you know what he's saying? I know you're wrecking it and then selling it as scrap. So stop wrecking it. And we'll pass this legislation now. You understand? You might be Senator Adam Schiff, but if you have any sense of fiscal responsibility, if you believe in the electoral process, which they told us it is, the new guy coming in is going to use the wall. If you get rid of this wall, we're going to have to pay for a wall that's more expensive now thanks to the inflation that your party saddled us with. We move on. Transition. RFK, thought to be one of the most controversial. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand said this about RFK Jr. Cut eight.
RFK Jr. has also spoke about food safety issues, which I care a lot about. I sit on the agriculture committee testing food, particularly food that goes into our school systems. We do very little food testing. A very small percentage of food that comes into this country is tested. And so I appreciate some of his views there. I also appreciate some of his views on clean air and clean water. So I think there's a great deal of issues where we may find common ground on with Mr. Kennedy, and I look forward to exploring those before I decide how I'm going to vote.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be hard for just a Democrat, knowing that you have 53 votes for Republicans. You have to vote against every Republican. I mean, Marco Rubio is supposed to get about 90 votes. He's very popular on both sides. They know he's dead serious about foreign policy. So I think he'll do good. But the ones that are so-called controversial, Tulsi, Pete Hegseth, RFK Jr., I'll just mention Cash Patel, whatever. I don't think they're that controversial, but let's say they are. Just listen to them. And if you're a Democrat, just know you used to love him 6 months ago, 8 months ago, until he was boxed out of running for president. Guy that's critical, Republican, Senator John Kennedy, cut 16.
I walk into my meeting with Mr. Kennedy with an open mind. I can tell you this. I have reached one conclusion. He should fire his lawyer, the one that petitioned the FDA to get rid of the polio vaccine. He should call him up, his lawyer up and say, look, man, stop dipping into your ketamine stash. The polio vaccine has saved hundreds and hundreds of millions of lives in the world. His lawyer didn't want to just study the vaccine. He wanted to get rid of the polio vaccine. That's bone deep down to the marrow stupid, as far as I'm concerned.
Listen, I agree. Getting rid of it, you know, it's without examining it. I want to go over the ingredients in vaccines. I want to talk about the mandate. Are kids getting way too much, way too early? Can we spread it out? Why do doctors feel so vigilant and angry when you say to him or her, you know, I don't think I want that. All of a sudden, all hell breaks loose. You can't get into public school. Is that the way we should be approaching things? I want to hear that argument. I want to find out what's in our food. I want to hear the argument. I'm telling you right now, if we have a noon hearing, House hearing, on the FDA and what's in our food, ratings will be through the roof. Everybody I know talks about this because it's hard enough to eat good when you feel like you're eating good and eating the right stuff. And then you find out still the stuff that's sprayed on your vegetables, the stuff that's in the cereal that you thought was healthy, you're not subscribing to. You're buying it. You don't know all this other stuff are in there to preserve it, to make it last longer. So you have to rationalize all this extra stuff. He's going to make you do that. At the same time, I think if he goes out there and says polio overrated, no big deal. To Mitch McConnell, had polio as a kid and barely holding on now. That's an issue, but I don't think he will. And I think he can defend himself well. I mean, he doesn't speak well, but he can think well, and he's articulate, and he'll be able to go to bat. And lastly, where do the Democrats go from here? When we come back, I'm going to go over some of that, and then we're going to welcome in Emily Campagno. She's getting set to host Outnumbered in 90 Minutes. She also has a book out called Under His Wings, How Faith on the Front Lines Has Protected American Troops. You are listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's The Brian Kilmeade Show. Radio that makes you think. This is The Brian Kilmeade Show.
The caucus and the party made its decision. They made it their choice, and I respect the outcome of the results. And we're moving forward. We're moving forward. So I'm looking forward to it. And you know, I ran the best race that I could.
I was very impressed with that. AOC goes down as ranking member of the Oversight Committee. The Oversight Committee, and she lost out to Jerry O'Connell. And he was, he's 74 years old. He's got cancer treatment instead of a 34-year-old. And guess who pushed, made sure that she did not get it? Nancy Pelosi. I mean, she might as well just stay speaker. What does Hakeem Jeffries even do? So she's got a broken hip. She goes overseas, and she's making sure certain people don't get chairmanships. So you make sure the 70 club or the 80 club continues, and you don't let new blood get in there. That's on them. Now, I think she's way to the left, but if you look at her, she got 84 votes. And she feels like she's in good stead Should this guy move over or be up next? She wants to be less left wing, more with the team, stop supporting primarying sitting congressmen and women. And maybe she'll do that. But where the party's going, I have no idea. And I don't think they have any idea either. I think they're really angry at each other. In fact, I just thought it was very interesting that Joe Biden decides to come out yesterday and say, I do not think sitting members of Congress should be allowed to make stock trades. You think? Did he ever think about bringing that up in the 70s, the 80s, the 90s? Now, then he went on to talk about how poor he was. I was always the poorest senator out there because I wasn't trading stock. But you know who that's a shot at? That's a shot at Nancy Pelosi, who's made millions off her stock trader. Certainly her husband has. She earned 65% return on all her trades in 2023. How do you do that? She traded nearly 4 million in stocks in 2023 with an estimated wealth of $250 million. Think about that for a second. How could that be allowed? Paul Pelosi made even more than that. The Pelosis make a ton of money. Imagine if you knew that Google was going to launch, if you knew everything about what was going to be happening with Apple. You knew all that. You could have invested. If you're Nancy Pelosi, the answer was, oh, thanks for telling me. I did invest.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, we are back, and Emily Campagna has just walked into the building. She's getting set to host Outnumbered. Normally, she'd be in intense meetings right now, being doing practice shows, getting set. People play the other four anchors during her rehearsal sessions, but she decided to put all that on hold to be on our show. And she also has some additional good news. Her book is out, doing great. It's called Under His Wings, How Faith on the Front Lines Has Protected American Troops. Emily, welcome.
Thank
officially.
You. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me.
How's the book tour going?
It's amazing. You know, the book debuted at number one on the New York Times bestseller list. I'm so grateful for that. I'm so honored. To me, it's a reflection of exactly where America is right now, which is thirsty for faith. And we are so grateful that we've sort of expended the shackles of the last administration, of the current administration. By the way, we still have a few weeks left, which really restrained people and really divorced faith from any presence socially and culturally and in the government here. And so I'm so grateful to be a messenger for these heroic stories of faith, for these warfighters for our country and warfighters in the army of Christ.
Right. I mean, you have people that just got fresh off war, Iraq and Afghanistan, right?
Yep. And back through World War One, my own family stories of that, letters we've had from my relatives that served in abroad. Every conflict is represented, every type of conflict, every branch, from chaplains to combat medics to nurses to the special operators that you've seen on the big screen and that you've read about. They are here in this book and so much more.
All right. So let's talk about war going on right now in Ukraine. There was assassination in Russia of a Russian general who was behind the chemical weapons attack and detection. Uzbekistan guy was captured. They said he was hired by Ukrainian intelligence. Your thoughts about this?
That the stability of the world under Trump's future presidency cannot come fast enough, and that the emboldenment for this, you know, you could say, well, it's a win, it's a score. But at the same time, anything frightens me as a taxpaying American right now with the current commander in chief. Mm-hmm. So what I am praying for is that in all of these classified briefings and in all of these machinations of our government and the military, that President Trump is read in on all of them, because nothing scares me more than the current commander in chief.
Yeah, I don't think they have any control of Ukraine. That's one thing is pretty certain. But the slow walking of weapons really prolonged the pain.
But that's
the goddess's point. Just terrible,
yes,
decisions.
And I do think our influence was substantial. I think our hamstringing served to your point, prolong everything. And I think diplomacy matters, quite frankly, but not in the way that the current administration has postured it. Diplomacy matters in the way that President Trump has furthered, which is, we hear this often, peace through strength, but also through honesty. Right, through blunt honesty, and not the kind of backdoor dealings and the two-faced, right, approach to our allies and to our enemies that this current administration held.
And Emily, you know what blows me away is people act like Russia's doing great, and they are making gains, but they have blown through maybe 700,000 troops, dead or wounded, off the battlefield. 700,000. 500 personnel carriers blown up. They can only make 200 a year. Their inflation's at 9%. They have to now tap into North Korean troops to force Ukraine out of Kursk in their country. So anyone who thinks this is going well for Russia isn't paying attention.
And keep in mind, too, this is against the backdrop of the Magnitsky Act, where we sought to punish those assets that were being hidden here in this country with those of nefarious intents. And to me, that illustrates, too, or I should say it really underscores, actually, the fact that Putin sees his people as collateral damage, as cannon fodder. And here in America, we see every single life with pride and with value, or at least this incoming administration does. So to your point, that just shows how expendable his own people are to him. That ruthlessness of that dictatorial person should really never be overstated.
So did you see any of Kamala Harris yesterday?
A little.
A little of her speech. I mean, some of the clips I saw, absolutely terrible. I mean, doesn't understand a word she's saying as she says it. She let her laugh back, which, like it or not, it's terrible for her. It makes her look unserious. So here's a little of Kamala Harris trying to tell everyone, I'm still your leader. Cut 19.
This fight to keep the light of America's promise and to ensure it burns bright. Well, this fight now, it continues with you. You are its heirs. We are its heirs.
Does you know what that means?
I can't even. The problem is with her oversimplistic and sort of attempts at being this lofty orator, it falls flat because there's no substance behind it. Right. This isn't a moment where she says something like that and it's backed up by details and specificity. The reality is she's one of the most unintelligent, unintellectual people in political power we've ever had. And I had to suffer her under her as a resident of San Francisco while she was district attorney, as a resident of California while she was attorney general. And the reality is she's been propped up her entire life from position to position without substance or experience to show for it. And all that is illustrated in these kind of speeches are like, lady, what are you talking about? And who wrote this? And this is exactly why you voted out. And yet again, to hammer this home, Kilmeade, she is our current vice president. This is who is currently second in command with the potential to be first in command. Again, how more frightening can you get? And how more clear can you get that the Democrat Party never had a deep bench? They never had one of substance. They propped up puppets the entire time to satisfy their virtue signaling needs at the expense, the collateral damage of the American people.
So on Pod Save America, they're trying to look at what Biden has done, what Harris was unable to do, and where they go from here. And they clearly are a rudderless ship.
Trump isn't president yet, a fact that's getting easier and easier to forget as Joe Biden seems to be disappearing from the public stage as his term comes to an end.
I guess what I'm more concerned about is less like, am I seeing Joe Biden enough? Maybe he's right that people don't want to hear from him. It's more like, do I feel confident right now that Joe Biden behind the scenes is thinking of every single way he can try to future-proof the White House? Do I think Joe Biden himself is like at command thinking about this? Like right now, like I don't.
The big story today in the New York Times saying that Joe Biden by Peter Baker is getting older by the day and that he's just running out of gas. He's shuffling slowly and he looks old beyond his age and his voice sounds weaker. No kidding. How long have we been saying this? He's not shuffling slower. He's been shuffling nonstop. They said it's hard to imagine he ever thought he could do another 4 years. Really? Didn't we say that from day one? What are they don't even acknowledge that they might have been wrong.
It was an exponential decay that we have seen, an exponential decline that we have been tracking. And the fact that now they gently, gently touch on, yeah, it seems like his days are numbered. Get out of here. That's the whole issue that I've had this entire time, Kilmeade, is that there's been not only zero honesty with the mainstream media, but a blatant capitulation and a blatant apologist media to further. Again, that person was our commander in chief. People died under his watch, people that wore the uniform and people that didn't.
Yeah, I know. I hear you. This is also a time when they have an opportunity to step up and maybe do something. And you have an opportunity to not worry about I'm stepping on Joe Biden's toes if I step up now. I'm stepping on Kamala Harris's next. I don't want to overshine her like Governor Shapiro. If you're Senator Fetterman, I don't think he'll ever run for president. But if you're Governor Shapiro, if you're Governor Beshear, if you have something to say and you're Gavin Newsom, and you think you got it, this is your time. And soon they're going to close ranks around somebody.
That's true. And here's the thing. I see in the Democrat Party a two-way, choose your own adventure where there's a two bifurcated path. And one is the same lane that they have been on. It would be, i.e., a Gavin Newsom. Zero substance, horrific policy, all talk, and only a virtue signaler. And keep in mind, too, that here's a white male telling people of color that he can speak better for them, right? So it's just, it's all trash. On the other side, you have someone like Governor Shapiro, who is actually a man of substance, who's actually accomplished things, whose policies may differ from mine, whose interest in stewardship of financial money in terms of where, you know, where it goes in our government differs politically, but at least you know he's intelligent and that he's tried to make strides. He does, in fact, have service in his best interest, in the country's best interest. That's someone I can respect. So the Democrat Party can choose, and I hope they choose wisely, learning from the mandate that just occurred in this election and also from Americans' exhaustion by being wasted, their tax dollars and their lives being wasted at the behest of these woke virtue signaling box checking administration. By the way, it's really just a couple people in charge, right? It's the Pelosi's, it's Biden, but the machine before he, you know, became the crypt keeper. The reality is everything was being handled by these sort of octogenarians at the helm, telling everyone else how that party should run. And I hope to God there's a different leadership coming in too.
I mean, how much longer can they live? I mean, let's be honest. I mean, Clyburn's in his 80s. Nancy Pelosi's breaking her hip in Luxembourg. You have, you know, some of these people, they just never go away. And I saw the 34-year-old AOC lost out on a leadership position. You may not like her, but if I'm looking for a change of pace, a new generation, I wouldn't be turned to Jerry O'Connell of 74 years old. I want to change gears if I can. Sure. You love sports.
Yes.
Right?
So do you.
Yesterday, Charlie Baker was on Capitol Hill to talk about college gambling extensively. But then they asked him about transgenders in sports, like San Jose State with this volleyball player, the forfeits that took place. Nobody checked with him. These players said, it's not fair. I'm not playing. It's not this school, and they would just have to lose the game or San Jose State would finally be eliminated. So Charlie Baker runs the NCAA, former Republican governor of Massachusetts. Listen to this exchange with Josh Hawley, cut 35.
Here, your guidelines say that transgender student athletes should be able to use the locker room, shower, and toilet facilities in accordance with their gender identity. And here they are, right here.
And then everybody else should have an opportunity to use other facilities if they wish to do so.
Okay, so the burden's on the women.
And it got worse from there. So think about this. He goes, what do you want me to do? Those are the rules. Doesn't want to change the rules. Doesn't express any reluctance with the rules or any disdain. Does he have any daughters? Are you comfortable with your daughter taking a shower with a guy that says he's a woman?
He is a coward, an absolute coward. It reminds me of the crossover, by the way, of Harris when
Pun
she
intended.
Said, yes, exactly. When Harris was like, well, you know, I'll do what the laws say. It's about the laws. The whole point is these people are in positions.
Be a leader.
Exactly, man. It's incumbent upon them to create that legislation. By the way, we got here because of horrible legislature. To your point, why can't he take a stand? And they're hemming and hawing when they're in the hot seat is just so indicative of how invertebrate that entire party is and all of these woke people. And how many girls lost their scholarships, lost their futures, lost an entire option of how their future could go and how their lives could go because of the tiny minority of these trans pretenders that these people in power protected legislatively.
So Senator Kennedy tried it with Charlie Baker. Listen to this.
Why don't you take a position on transgender biological males competing against females? You just told me it wasn't fair.
There's a federal standard on this is one that we would work with you on if you wish to work on it.
Why don't you do it on your own?
Because we're a national governing body and we follow federal law.
Why don't you go to Amazon and buy a spine online and take a stand?
Right. You take the job. What laws? Guys, I'm in charge of the NCAA. It's a federal organization. That's fine. But I got to tell you, I got this huge problem and this is where I stand. And then you have a press conference after, Emily, and you start explaining to the American people what you want to do.
You know what kills me is that the governing body, like who else protects the athletes? This is the point of the IOCC, the point of the NCAA. You are supposed to protect and represent the athletes physically, like in all different ways. And for you to just say like, oh, we just do what the federal government says. No, you take a stand and protect your athletes. And that means and includes biological women. It certainly doesn't mean destroying them physically and destroying their future because you don't have a spine.
All right. So you have your book out. It's number one in the country. It's still on the bestseller list. under his wings, how faith on the front lines has protected American troops, Emily. But we need to know something else. Your social media presence is huge.
Did you see my reel today?
I did not see it.
Oh, my gosh. What did you have? I dress up as the Grinch while driving my car, and then I was holding the book. So basically sort of like a pun, like the Grinch has Santa's sleigh, and then he read my book. So it's his heart grew 3 sizes.
Where'd you get this idea?
I made it up.
You made it up.
Because I have the Grinch sweater and like my paws.
So your social media presence is huge. Who got you into this?
Well, Johnny Belisario was the one that first created my Instagram for me and taught me how to use it. I never had any social media until coming here. That was just a few years ago. Johnny created it for me.
Did you edit it?
The little reel?
The Grinch?
Oh, yeah. I did everything. My husband filmed and then I like put it together as the reel.
Did he tell you like his job is a little bit more serious? All right.
Yes.
Right. Did he look at you and say, excuse me, Emily, is this what you do for a living? Because you just got married. This could have been a deal breaker.
Yeah, no.
I mean, it could be like you're dressing up to go to work.
No, he loves me. So he was like, we were having fun. We had a great time. And okay. He loves cars just like me.
Right.
So it's great.
And that's great. So also, you're very aware of like, I'm going to post this. Like, what did you say to me you're going to do now? You said, Brian, when are we done?
Oh, yeah. I was like, after this, we should juggle a soccer ball and put it up. But the thing is, here's why. Because social media to me is a portion of work. I consider it part of my job.
Therefore, I take it seriously
and I'm consistent with it. I think I don't have a private Instagram or personal Instagram where it actually shows like, here's me at the Thanksgiving table. Like this is part of our professional representation and what that looks like here. So it's easy to do because it's part of my work.
So where's the promo for Outnumbered come? Did you do anything? Like, this is going to be an Outnumbered?
Not today. Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
No. Yes, I did that yesterday, but not today. Today was Grinch Day.
Right. And Grinch because?
Because
you love the theme.
Yeah. We're getting closer to Christmas. So just in case people are still shopping, they know that Under His Wings would be a great stocking stuffer or gift under the tree.
Now, this is first year married?
Yes.
So how has that changed Christmas?
It looks the same as we always do. We're just married now. So it means like one, we go to my family and then we go to his family and then we have a cabin, just the two of us. So it's always the.
Is this in the vicinity?
West Coast, East Coast, and then cabin in the.
Does it have running water?
Yeah. And the funniest thing about it actually is that, and we laugh about it, is that the first time we booked it, it was beautiful. It's in the snow, right on a river. It's like gore. It's literally out of like a Thomas Kincaid painting. It's perfect. And we were like, why does every room have earplugs when we first got there? We were like, this is weird. And we were like, oh, I guess it's just like, I don't know. People like to sleep with earplugs. And then we realized since it was dark that there's actually a train track that goes right by, like not exaggerating, literally like the size of the studio, which you guys is not big. It's like 50 feet. So the train goes by every like 20 minutes. We thought it was so hilarious. So we go there every year because we love it. It's like perfect otherwise. And the train is really funny.
Do you own it?
No. Oh. We just rent. It's an Airbnb rental. Yeah.
Gotcha.
But it's perfect otherwise. It's like it's on the river, mountains, tree. It's stunning. And then this is the
Under His Wings, the name of the book. Go get it for a Christmas present. Emily, thanks so much. Let's juggle.
Yes.
Back in a moment.
Educating, entertaining, enlightening. You're with Brian Kilmeade. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
The day after, Donald Trump had that crazy rally at Madison Square Garden.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Garbage. I rolled the dice. And I called him on the phone. And he answered! Obviously, he said no. But my point is, I was able to get to him by dialing his phone. If I were to want to connect with VP Harris or President Biden, there's 50 people between me and that. I could write a note that maybe could get to somebody to get somebody, then through Pony Express and a pigeon, something might end up in a mailbox near them.
And by the way, that is Stephanie Ruhle. I don't normally play cuts from MSNBC, but it was important because here's a big critic of Donald Trump. Here's a woman that spends most of her time just ripping or promoting Joe Biden's economy. She's business by trade, I think. She's got the news background, too. And she just talked about the frustration of not having any access to an administration she spends a lot of time defending. And you said Donald Trump is accessible. He always has been. And here's the other thing that nobody talks about. He doesn't really care if you're famous. He doesn't care if you're a successful host. If he sees you on the street and you say something to him, like, I'm going to vote for you, or I saw you last night in The Apprentice, or I was at your speech the other day, he cares just about much about you as he does about an MSNBC host. But, of course, he likes Fox hosts better. Most of them. Brian Kilmeade Show.
top Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for listening. Brian Kilmeade Show. This hour is going to be great. It's going to be important. I'm so glad you're here for it. And we'll be taking your calls at 1-866-408-7669. I come to you from Midtown Manhattan, where the place is just packed. It's mobbed with people here, I guess, because they're on vacation, taking a tour, because on the holidays, whether it's a Broadway play or some of the elite restaurants, you got a great tree in front of our building at Fox, a great tree in the Rockefeller Plaza. So it is an area in which it's kind of funny. You can only see the tree for a certain amount of time, and they're trying to move you past. That's how popular it is. Well, our number one nemesis in the world, don't let anyone kid you, Russia might be the most belligerent, but our most formidable is China. Dr. Jonathan Ward will be with us, founder of the Atlas Foundation. He's an expert in this area. His latest book, China's Vision of Victory, will tell you all the latest. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Good morning. Remember the context in which you exist. Yeah, I did that.
Wow, here we go. Dems divided. Kamala gets an incoherent state of the party speech as the old guard still balking the new guard from bringing their Democrats in a new direction, which I assume they thought they needed to go in. We'll see.
Number two.
He should fire his lawyer, the one that petitioned the FDA to get rid of the polio vaccine. He should call his lawyer up and say, look, man, stop dipping into your ketamine stash. Polio vaccine has saved hundreds and hundreds of millions of lives in the world.
Senator Kennedy about RFK. Trump transitioned, highlighted by massive acceptance of optimism that they are looking forward to him taking over the White House, as nominees are impressing for the most part on Capitol Hill. But as you see, there's some people that have to be won over while Congress scrambles to avoid a shutdown, but might hand off a hand grenade in March to the new president.
Number one.
I had a discussion with an individual from the White House, and that person basically told me that, hey, once these immigrants get across the border, that's all we really care about. And to me, that's a problem.
And that is a problem if you're a police chief in Aurora, Colorado, and you have people kidnapped and tortured by transnational gangs, don't you think? Worse by the day. Biden's border policies have made big cities and small towns more terrifying than we even believe was possible. We'll talk about it and why Aurora was never safe, even though the governor of Colorado and the mayor of Colorado said it was. And an apology needs to be made to Donald Trump, the councilwoman who stood strong and told us about what was happening with Trente de Aragua, that Venezuelan gang that's taken over apartment complexes. And now we find out about these people being tortured a couple of days ago. But thankfully, there were 14 arrests, 14 from Venezuela, two additional ones from Honduras. All had one thing in common, looking to create havoc in America, which is pretty horrific. Carlos Moreno was a Salt Lake County Council District 2 candidate. When he heard about what was happening in Aurora, he thought it was important to tell the New York Post that his town, not as big as Aurora, is being terrorized by the same Venezuelan gang dissidents. He says our law enforcement people are not ready. They are not ready yet to face off with these kinds of gangs. So in case you're thinking, because you're listening to us in New York City, well, that's why I don't live in the city. I don't want to live in Philadelphia. I don't want to deal with the gangs and the illegal immigrants. They're everywhere. Springfield, Aurora, Salt Lake County. And cops are not trained for international gangs, I don't think. But now we have American gangs fighting against them. And this is going to be Joe Biden's legacy. And this is why people voted the way they did. And it wasn't too long ago. It was in October when J.D. Vance, who to his credit did all the Sunday shows, was going around to these problematic areas who were sanctuary cities and saying, help is on the way. And Martha Raddatz thought it would be important to point out to everyone that there is no problem in Aurora, even though we all knew it was. We've seen the video. Cut six.
President Trump was actually in Aurora, Colorado, talking to people on the ground. And what we're hearing, of course, Martha, is that people are terrified by what has happened with some of these Venezuelan gangs.
Senator Vance, I'm going to stop you because I know exactly what happened. Martha. I'm going to stop you. The incidents were limited to a handful of apartment complexes, and the mayor said our dedicated police officers have acted on those concerns. A handful of problems.
Only, Martha, do you hear yourself? Only a handful of apartment complexes in America were taken over by Venezuelan gangs, and Donald Trump is the problem and not Kamala Harris's open border?
Is that crazy? I mean, and she should say, wow, this is really embarrassing. I mean, you should send out something because George Stephanopoulos, I mean, this is not something you should be sued over, just your opinion. But you're sitting there trying to get answers. Your next guest could come on, could be Jared Polis, and say J.D. Vance was exaggerating. You, J.D., they'd be wrong. But Jared Polis did say that. But she just says, I just want to say that what you're saying is not true, and it's an exaggeration. No, it's not. It is, and it got worse because you took your foot off the gas, and you have a Democratic governor who thought President Trump just said those things because he was running for president. Now that he got it, he's not going to enforce it. And I want to move on and talk about something else that's occupying Washington, and that is the government shutdown. It looks like it's going to be avoided if, of course, Speaker Johnson's deal that he signed up with Akeem Jeffries that passed through the Senate is going to work. And they're talking about doing a continuing resolution, which will pay the bills. Will pay the bills up until March. And has a few things in it that people don't like. And Johnson said, what do you want me to do? I have one half of one body, and I don't want to do a government shutdown and put the next president, his president, up against it. So in the three-month CR, it's going to cost, Johnson can point to $10 billion in economic assistance to farmers, Republicans for the most part want, inclusion of an outbound investment of restrictions on China. Most people see China as a problem. We do have natural disasters that slam Florida and North Carolina, so they want $100 billion in disaster relief. Haiti is what the Democrats want. They want to get a trade provision extended for duty-free imports on textiles. That talk about gangs. They're run by gangs. The Commanders are going to get a new stadium back at RFK Stadium out of Maryland, so they're kind of losers in Maryland. But they are supposed to get their Francis Scott Key Bridge built and paid for. What else? So it's going to be expensive, but I just don't know what choice that he has. The bill is 1,547 pages. It's going to go 3 months and get the president. The Senate is going to be his for the first time, and the House will be his by a very small margin. Elon Musk tweeted out, don't sign the bill. He's been contacted, the speaker. Speaker says, I explained it to him, but he still put out on his Twitter feed, not a good bill. Don't sign it. I'm trying to cut the budget. This won't help. I'm not sure that the speaker, they fully understand the speaker does not have a choice. People are calling him a rhino. We have people weighing in. Mike Lee is against it. We have Chip Roy. It's negotiating crap. Congressman Marjorie Taylor Greene, the CR, is turning into a three-month omnibus. But it's not so far. So we had the speaker on earlier. On Fox and Friends, at which time he said that this is really the only choice I have. So we'll see if it's going to pass. They are giving him 72 hours to go through it. Politico says with less than 3 weeks to go before the House speakership vote, Johnson will need a near unanimity in his conference to get reelected. He told me on Saturday at the Army-Navy game he does not see a problem. They all knew this was heading this direction. This could be a problem. We'll see. 1-866-408-7669. I'll come back and talk about more about this. Ralph Norman has just weighed in. He said the speaker is in a box. He's a congressman from South Carolina, and he's ultra-conservative from the Freedom Caucus. A lot of people upset. And right now, as Norman says, he's not going to vote for it. Nicole Malliotakis of New York says, right now, I'm not going to vote for it. You know who's going to? Democrats. Will that put Speaker Johnson in trouble? It got McCarthy in trouble, but I think that Trump will control his minions. I'm Brian Kilmeade. What do you think? We'll take your calls next.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
This fight to keep the light of America's promise and to ensure it burns bright. Well, this fight now, it continues with you. You are its heirs. We are its heirs.
Again, I've heard this so many times, and she pauses and nobody reacts. Who writes her speeches? You would think after after 3 weeks in Hawaii, a campaign for 90 straight days in which she was able to interact with people, get some feedback from consultants, spend $1.5 billion, you would think she'd have an idea what she wants to say and the mission she'd want to continue. But all she talks is in generalities and platitudes. It's almost to me, Saturday Night Live worthy. Jennifer, listen on WABC on Long Island. Hey, Jennifer.
Hi. Good morning, Brian. I met you at the Patriot Awards.
All right.
And first just wanted to thank you for all that you do. I have absolutely, as many Americans don't have any trust in the government at this time and cannot wait for January to come so that President Trump can bring us back to where we were, even better. And comment about Kamala. She's still speaking in riddles. She still doesn't make any sense. I agree with your last statement in that it doesn't seem as though she's learned anything, that she hasn't grown from all that went on. She didn't reflect on herself and say, what did I do wrong? What could I have done different? It seems to be such a blame game, and still fighting. What about her whole idea when she and Biden took the stage and said, we want to unite the country? There has been none of that since the day the two of them took over.
Absolutely not. And by the way, this whole drone thing, we don't know what's going on with the drones. We're looking up. We see them. I saw them in Wantagh the other night, but we have most of our staff lives in New Jersey. They see them constantly. You had Governor Christie, I could play a soundbite from the other day, said, first time in my life, I looked up and was right over my house. So we're seeing these drones, and they try to explain it away that most of them are fixed wing and it's nothing to worry about while not telling us what it is. You can't have it both ways. So if you're trying to get trust in this government on the way out, forget it. That ship has sailed, especially with this drone. Johnny in Oklahoma. Hey, Johnny.
Morning, Brian.
What's on your mind?
Yes, I was wondering about the illegal immigrants and the vaccines. If the left is so worried about everybody needing a vaccine, why did they allow and want millions of people that's unvaccinated to come into this country?
Great point. And we remember saying that at the time in 2020, they came, you know, we have to be vaccinated. We have to wear a mask, but at the border, come one, come all. Hey, you gotta be kidding. So they weren't exactly coming over with vaccine, but with that vaccine cards. In terms of what they're doing at the border, thanks for the call, Johnny. Bill Malusian was on last night with an exclusive story with Laura Ingraham. Just as how the White House has gone out of its way to be disinterested and I think distrustful and disingenuous about what is really going on at the border. That if you look at what's going on with this app where people can actually log on in their country and just walk across the border, 1,500 a day, 900,000 in a year, while telling us border traffic is down, it's ridiculous. Cut five.
We got to call a spade here, right? This White House has just blatantly gaslit the American public over the last few years. How many times did we see them get up to that podium every week and claim the border is closed, the border is secure? They even had the nerve to say that mass releases weren't happening, no matter how many times we got it on video. And look, unfortunately, the chickens have come home to roost at this point. Large amounts of foreign violent criminals have gotten into the United States, caught and released at the border because there's little to no vetting going on. And now they're popping up in cities. Women are paying the price, whether it's Laken Riley, Jocelyn Nungery, Rachel Morin. We keep seeing these horrible headlines. And unfortunately, Laura, given what we've seen the last 4 years, there's probably going to be a significant amount more of it coming. And that's probably why people just voted for mass deportation. Yeah.
And they did. And there's no question they're going to get it too. Criminals first. And in Brooklyn, they found a South African on the FBI terror watch list. Brooklyn, New York. Across the border, they're catching up to him. They got to work out. They said the illegals that are allowed to stay here, they wait for their day in court, get bracelets. I'm not for that. I mean, I think I don't want to store them in human warehouses, but I just don't think these ankle bracelets are going to work for criminals, for people who are not looking to break the law, but looking to be able to stay here. That's one thing. But the portion that is going to be problematic to us in terms of our safety, they'll just rip those things off. So Kata Truss is in Chicago. She's one of the major, the many Chicago citizens from the inner city, working class, who is just dismayed with Brandon Johnson keep illegal immigrants first while getting the budget, or burying the budget in red ink. Cut seven.
The fact of the matter is that Mayor Johnson does not seem to care what the constituents of Chicago feel like and what the concerns we're expressing. I think that if he would take a moment to address our concerns and to deal with the fact that we are not happy with what we're seeing, we're not happy with where our tax dollars are going, you won't have to kick people out of the meeting because they're rowdy or because they don't agree with what you're saying. You have a responsibility to the citizens of the city of Chicago, not to the illegals who are here. And Mayor Johnson refuses to accept that fact.
So you should know this. This is the black community speaking up because they try to be kicked aside. Now, they have millions of dollars in debt, and they're spending a ridiculous amount of money on illegal immigrants over the last 2 years. And still, it's like only 40,000. And that's nothing compared to New York, and they still can't afford it. They put them in airports. They take over gyms, workout facilities. They just sit there, grab mattresses, and they get free food. And people are saying, well, my kid's education is terrible, one of the worst in the country. Now we really don't feel safe in the streets. We're taxed way too much to the point where I got to get out of here. May I just add, too, it's one of the coldest places on the planet. Why am I there? And then you have this going on with legal immigrants. And just as Mayor Johnson think he's doing the kind thing. He's doing the extremist thing by allowing them to live there, going to bat for them, telling ICE you're not going to be here. One of the things that he continues to say is we finally built up trust in our community with the law enforcement. We don't want law enforcement in there throwing out members of our community. Mr. Mayor, illegal immigrant, criminals, don't worry about it. Don't worry about perception. Most people want to be protected from criminals and gangsters that actually are paying their bills and are not laundering the money in some type of legal activity. So that's what's happening locally, and it's going to be a big deal. Sanctuary cities overall, like Chicago, they have 56.3% of all illegals in it. That's out of the total of 7.9 million. 56% are in sanctuary cities because even though they're more expensive, they get the accommodations, and also they get this thing called a shield from arrest. Whether they're committing a crime or not, you're not going to be arrested in Mira Sanctuary City. That keeps ICE out, even though ICE is going to start suing. What they're going to start doing, and Tom Holman explained this to me, if you are not letting ICE into your prisons, if you're shielding would-be criminals from any prosecution while they wait for their day in court, that is harboring a criminal. And these mayors will start getting arrested if they do that.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we are back. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. You know, it's easy to get caught up with what's going on at the border. I understand that people have fixated on what's happening in the Middle East with the fall of Assad and all the ripple effects after that. I'm endlessly fascinated by it. Russia losing 500 to 700,000 people off the battlefield, dead or wounded, having their inflation go up to 9%. Trying to finish off Ukraine before they finish off themselves. Trump coming into office. I get it. But the people, the one country we're going to be matched up against for the foreseeable future who want us distracted in all those areas in which I just mentioned is China. And while they've been alienated and while they poisoned the world with the pandemic, they've been building up this arsenal of manufacturing, robotics, as well as electric cars. and clean energy that they feel as though they've cornered the market on it. But the problem is they have a whole generation that's not working. Unemployment at 37% for people under 34. They have a lot of people showing unrest in their country who are getting restless because of all the restrictions, and it's certainly squelching their entrepreneurial attitude. Joining us now is Dr. Jonathan Ward, the founder of Atlas Organization, a consultancy focused on the rise of China and India. He also has a book out, The Decisive Decade, American Grand Strategy for Triumph Over China and China's Vision of Victory. Jonathan, welcome back.
Hi, Brian. Good to be with you.
So I don't know if you saw Thomas Friedman's article today and talked about China and what he noticed and what they've been doing since they poisoned the world and never were held accountable in the pandemic. Your thoughts about the state of China today?
Sure. Well, look, we're headed into, I heard you playing the Winston Churchill clips before this. I mean, this is going to be the new Cold War, and we'll be very lucky if we can keep it a Cold War. I mean, this is an adversary that, as you and I have talked about in the past, is preparing for war with the U.S. in the Pacific. I mean, you've mentioned what happened in COVID. They've already seen what our country is like under extreme stress from a pandemic like that. And they've also, are directly subsidizing fentanyl going into this country, which has now killed more Americans than the entirety of the Second World War, to say nothing of their general economic grand strategy, which we have to take on right now. Across their entire general industrial base, their trade, surplus, not only with us, but with much of the world. I mean, there's a lot that we have to do to get in the game. I mean, at this point, the U.S. has woken up much more than where we were, let's say, 5 years ago to the nature of the problem. But we're not yet in the action phase. They're waging Cold War against us and worse. We're going to have to get back into this. But at the same time, as you've described, they have some economic weaknesses. That's really what we can exploit, how we can ultimately win. We win or lose this based on American economic power and on whether or not we're willing to take the actions that deny them access to our markets, to our technology, and to our capital. If we do all that, as I wrote in Decisive Decade, and go through with economic containment of China, in the 2020s, in the Decisive Decade, then we're going to take apart their economic and military rise and position ourselves to win the long game. But this is the main event. And I think the new administration is going to be very focused on China's strategy across the board. The real question is, how fast can they execute?
Yeah, there's a lot of things going on, though. What did they learn from the pandemic? That when they got isolated from products, when they feel as though they're boycotted or tariffed, they're going to learn to make their own stuff. So they've increased manufacturing massively and robotics, right?
Well, sure. And robotics provides a major offset to their demographic decline. I mean, that's one of their long-term weaknesses, but they're going to roll out as much automation as they can into the general industrial base. And their manufacturing output is, by some estimates, 30% of global manufacturing output, which makes it double the U.S. So when we think about the United States that won the Second World War, that prevailed in the Cold War, I mean, we were the undeniable center of industrial and economic gravity, and we've handed that off to China. And you take that manufacturing power, and they've translated it into dominance of global goods trade. So these are all the battles we've lost in the economic picture: manufacturing, trade, other things, in strategic industries. And we have to go back and reclaim that territory in the global economy. So you're going to need a major U.S. reindustrialization, supply chain security. I mean, in the pandemic, they were even basically taking American factories in the China market and saying, you're not going to export anywhere in the world. And they know this. They told us that they can deny critical import, critical materials to the U.S., such as, in that case, pharmaceuticals and PPE. And they've made those threats already. So we'd be crazy to continue to depend on it. We have to work very fast to secure the supply chains and generally reindustrialize.
And we'll see what they think about Donald Trump. He kind of taunted him, invited President Xi over to his inauguration. I don't think he's going, but they are sending a representative. So the other big race is for AI. And there's a sense that they have caught up to us. Eric Schmidt, founder of Google, wrote a book about it. Listen to what he had to say.
Well, I used to think we were a couple of years ahead of China, but China has caught up in the last 6 months in a way that is remarkable. The fact of the matter is that a couple of the Chinese programs, one, for example, is called DeepSeek, looks like they've caught up. And this is even after these extraordinary efforts by the Trump and Biden administration to withhold high-powered chips. The Chinese are clever, and they understand the power of a new kind of intelligence for their industrial might, their military might, and their surveillance system.
Your thoughts?
Well, sure. And Eric Schmidt, I think, has been one of the very few business leaders that's willing to call out the China challenge for what it's for what it is. So that's all commendable. But, you know, the bottom line is we have had an AI boom in this country. And if you go back to the Kai-Fu Lee book from, you know, 5 or 6 years ago called AI Superpowers, he basically says, look, China will win this race because they have access to such an enormous amount of data in their country. And they've built, you know, pretty significant technology companies at that point. And he said, unless the real innovation takes place in American companies. And I would say that's what we're seeing, in fact. I mean, we've had this major technology boom. You can see that in the markets. You can see that in many of our stocks, which are just way, way above the market cap of any Chinese technology company at all. So I think we're going to have the capitalization advantage. And if we can translate that into an innovation advantage and sustain that while also through policy, executing an economic containment of China, continuing to fight the chip war against them, continuing to deny them access to the stuff that we invent and build in the West, we'll come out ahead on this. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they're going to be very busy using AI and every other key, you know, technology of the 21st century to improve their military industrial base and to improve their ability to fight wars against the U.S. and our friends and allies. So we have to be very mindful of the military space, but I think we're going to have some fundamental advantages here that we're just beginning to see.
Right. We'll see. We definitely have innovation, and they're trying to take it away because they don't understand the human element. The Pentagon just released a 2024 China military report, just happened this morning. And one of the findings, they found that China is expanding its nuclear force, increasing its military pressure on Taiwan, and deepening its ties with Russia. Kind of knew all that. While there have been less intercepts of U.S. aircraft the past year, China has increased its aggressiveness in the South China Sea against the Philippines. The report also found that China's military corruption is plentiful, and removal of 15-plus military officers took place and may have disrupted the progress to the 2027 modernization goal of being ready to conduct a military invasion of Taiwan. So they're obsessed with getting Taiwan, and they're obsessed with making sure we're not a part of that.
Well, look, Brian, I mean, the way pretty much all of their military decision-making going back to the founding of the People's Republic of China in 1949 has been about using territorial disputes and territorial claims to prove a point against other major powers and other countries. So I think what this ultimately comes down to is they do envision a military showdown with the United States in the Pacific. I mean, even going back to the Mao years, he sort of dreamed of pushing America out of the Pacific and pushing America out of Asia. And, you know, China's vision of victory covers a lot of that continuity between the founding and now Xi Jinping. But we shouldn't take it for granted because, again, that giant industrial base, I mean, we've seen assessments coming out of think tanks, coming out of Washington in the public eye that show that we have a major disadvantage in terms of munitions, in terms of
sort
of the ability to sustain that. Right, exactly.
Yeah. So let's talk about their role with Russia. Let's talk about their role with Russia. Where are the limits? They are so superior economically, militarily. They have a much more skilled workforce. Russia's lost like a million people with a brain drain who don't want to get drafted into this war. Where is the limits of that relationship? How has it changed China?
Well, look, I mean, they're basically in the process of making an acquisition. I mean, they are 10 times the Russian economy. The Russian economy is in real trouble because of American and allied sanctions. And that's always been a military partnership. I mean, the bottom line, they started, you know, when Russia invaded Ukraine the first time in the 2010s and 2014 and seized Crimea, China was also building the military islands in the South China Sea. So they've been doing this together. And I think they've envisioned together this moment of taking on the U.S., both strategically and militarily. And that's what we're really seen accelerate here. On the other hand, the U.S. has basically imposed zero cost on the Chinese economy for their support for Putin's war. I mean, you all know that he's been able to sustain his war, rebuild his military, all of that because of China's help.
I know.
And, you know, I've talked with you on your show at the very outset of the Russian invasion, where the point was, look, China's backing this. They wouldn't have done it without China's support, but we've done nothing.
I want to bring you to the Middle East.
Banking sector or any of those.
And so there's other people in this alliance. You got North Korea, who's fighting with Russia. And I'm sure China's a little queasy about North Korea fighting in a European war. They did have trouble. They are in control. They do supplement, but they don't have total control of that country. And then Iran. They're buying oil from Iran. So they're loving it. They get cheap oil from Russia. They get cheap oil from Iran. They're loving this war. And H.R. McMaster says, time to secondary sanction Iran on this. Listen.
I think some things are absolutely going to happen right away, which is really to tighten the grip on the Iranians from a financial perspective, you know, from an interdiction of, you know, their ghost fleet and so forth. Maybe secondary sanctions on banks, Chinese banks and others. You know, China buys 97% of Iran's oil. Mm-hmm. So they're feeding Iran's ATM so they can continue these proxy wars against us, their Arab neighbors, and Israel, and employ the strategy of really expending every Arab life, you know, to accomplish their aims of kicking us out of the Middle East and destroying Israel and killing all the Jews.
So he says that'll happen right away and they'll feel that. And then I worry about, because we're buying material for our military that from China, there's some material we only get from them. So they could say, well, you're going to sanction us. We're going to start holding back material for your weaponry, which obviously we need.
Sure. And that's the direction of travel for this whole thing. I mean, that's U.S.-China decoupling. They're going to, you know, they've already shown us that with critical minerals. You know, we've done semiconductors against them. But bottom line, the decoupling flows in such a way where we have to have secure supply chains militarily and in terms of critical things that are essential for the country. So we just have to do that. And as for this axis, I mean, you know, we've talked about this in the past. I mean, the real elements of it. It's Russia and China. I mean, that's the core of it. The Chinese economy supports all these other adversaries. The Iranian regime, which has its own proxies in the Middle East, I mean, that, you know, only stays afloat really because of
Got a little bit of a freeze there. Yeah, we might have lost it. But let me play this because I want to ask him if we get him unfrozen, which we probably will. I want to ask him about TikTok before we go because we're up against the clock anyway. And here's what Donald Trump said about TikTok yesterday, and he said, look, I used it and it worked. It helped me get young people. Listen.
We'll take a look at TikTok. You know, I have a warm spot in my heart for TikTok because I won youth by 34 points. And there are those that say that TikTok had something to do with that. Now, Joe Rogan did, and some of the other people that were recommended by my son, Barron, he knew names. I said, who is that? Tell me, who's that? Dad, you got to be kidding. I can't believe you don't know. And I did those interviews, and it was actually sort of cute. Do you want to know the truth? But we did them, and that had an impact. But TikTok had an impact, and so we're taking a look at it.
So TikTok's got to be banned. But what the president said is, I used the platform. I got young people. I did a good job posting there. And you do have a great audience, but that's not the point. TikTok's going to be banned in a few weeks if they don't sell to an American company. And Frank McCourt was on with us yesterday. We have Kevin O'Leary on with us previously, who said, I'll buy it. And you know what? Frank McCourt said, keep the algorithm. And lastly, I want to bring back in Jonathan Ward. But the president's got to sell. It's a spying device, number one. And number two, it's a way for them to control American thought patterns by taking the next generation and deciding what news is news. Israel, no good. Taiwan, no good. Tariffs on China, no good. You watch the subtle news feed. It is pro-China. And Jonathan, I want to get you just to weigh in before we have to let you go about TikTok. It's got to go, right?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, sell it to Kevin O'Leary. That's great. The real sticking point we're going to see is that if Beijing wants to control the algorithm, it tells us everything we need to know. I mean, they are using this for manipulation, for ultimately for propaganda. And they even sent that push button earlier this year to all users to say, call your congressperson. I mean, you can imagine the power of the app right there. Let's say that there's an attack on Taiwan and they're sending push button notifications. Call your congressperson to tell them not to support Taiwan. I mean, no, it cannot be in the hands of the People's Republic of China. And we just have to keep going down that road and stay strong on these issues.
Yep, it's going to be our number one nemesis, China's vision of victory, as soon as we get this Ukraine war over with. Dr. Jonathan Ward, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brian.
All right, back in a moment to wrap up the hour.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Information you want, truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Amazon is planning to donate $1 million to Donald Trump's inauguration. It makes sense because Amazon and Trump both want to ship stuff out as fast as possible.
Donald Trump has been named Time's Person of the Year because no person on earth has taken up more of our time.
That's pretty funny for a guy. I think this is going to change. I mean, hopefully these guys get funny again. They had some great lines. It helps us on Monday, doesn't it?
It does, except you're out on Monday, so we have to do it on Wednesday.
Right. That's true. No, I thought, yeah, it was good on Saturday. I always get it in my house. Why do you DVR that show? It's so left because I'm still hoping the cold open will be funny. And then I go right to Weekend Update. And I just hope they have a few lines there.
They do. And some days it's good. Some days it's bad. Some days are so good we can't play it on the air.
So what happens to, like, Colin Jost next? You normally, that spot, you get a talk show. Dennis Miller got a talk show. Seth Meyers got a talk show. Jimmy Fallon got a talk show.
Yeah.
What happens to him next? I don't even know. I'm sure he can interview people, but we just don't know it.
I mean, I think he enjoys what he's doing now. He does a great job, the two of them. I mean, the talk show isn't what it used to be. Yeah. And I mean, he doesn't need to even work, even though he's good. I think he's good at what he does. He's married to Scarlett Johansson. I mean, I'd be pretty content in life right now.
They say that show does burn you out, though.
Yes.
Right.
But when you just do Weekend Update, does it burn you out in the same way?
That's true. When you don't have to act.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
All right. That's a good point. I'll take it.
Every now and then I'll have one.
Yeah, every once in a while. But then there are other days.
That I really just fall on my face. And it's
right.
Terrible.
It's just unbelievable. And people will never know because I cover for you. Just quick note. I'm going to be on stage next time, February 15th. It's going to come quick. By the time the holidays is done, we'll probably just have be back to right after the new year. And then we'll have 6 weeks to get it going. But go to BrianKilmeade.com, History, Liberty, and Laughs. If anywhere in Florida, this theater is huge. So we were at the other theater, which is being revamped, but that was $550. We're already at that.
Yeah, so the Florida Theater.
The Florida Theater is huge. So it is probably the biggest venue we've ever played at. So it's over 1,000, and it could expand to more. So I hope to see everybody in there. Over in Jacksonville, in the area, growing area, where the Jaguars were supposed to be good, but for the second straight year, they're not. And, of course, I'll be on Fox and Friends tomorrow morning, hosting for Jeff Z on Friday night and on Monday, and doing the 5 on Monday. And I'll finish with a flourish on Christmas Eve. So this is the Brian Kilmeade Show. Thanks so much for watching and listening.
Kudlow on Fox Business is now on the go for podcast fans. Get key interviews with the biggest business newsmakers of the day. The Kudlow podcast will be available on the go after the show every weekday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.